Good Friday afternoon. Jesse didn't, you know, point that out.
Yeah.
And thank you for tuning in this time of the day. And as usual, we are your drive time of voices here on Eagle FM. And the show is Home Run.
And good afternoon, guys. Yes, if I sound like a beaver, you know, talking through a tunnel, through an air tunnel, I'm sorry.
And those guys are construction experts.
No, they are. No, they are engineering experts. They're the only guys, the only, that what they call, they're known as, but it's them and the ants and the termites.
Yeah.
Which are the builders. Okay. In construction, ants and termites are your biggest enemies for your foundation of your buildings. Because what ants do, ants slip and look, they go around burrowing, you know,
their burrows everywhere.
What can I call it? Their transportation network through your house. So, or through your house's foundation. The same with termites as well.
Be one through your kitchen.
You know, and the termites even Western bypass any wooden floors you might have.
And boy, are they good.
And you just see them carrying it away. That's the worst part. So, yeah, so in nature, those guys are pretty good. Okay, no one obviously wants to be the dung beetle because you don't want to be known as nature's, you know, waste collector.
Municipality.
No waste collector. Garbage collection.
Sorry, guys.
So yeah. Welcoming you back, dear listeners, to this Friday edition. Obviously hoping that you've enjoyed your May Day celebrations. Even though Helmut and I, we didn't talk about anything May Day-ish, which is a first, Helmut, actually, which we didn't do.
Oh, I did.
Okay, you did in the morning.
Uh-huh.
Obviously for our afternoon session.
I was, you know, basically making fun of everyone, including my boss. I was really risking my salary yesterday.
After it was in your bank account already?
After it was in my bank. Okay. I forgot that, well, there's this month also. That
yeah,
month.
You're almost looking forward to the next month. And yeah. So it can be, what is that accounting term that they sometimes use? It can be, that the punishment can be deferred to a more suitable time frame.
Don't give him ideas. But
why, you just already alluded to it. I can't laugh, Helmut. Really, I can't laugh. So, jokes today have to be literally on a minimum. They have to be on a premium even today.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people would think I'm some sort of a sports car busy sounding off here in the studio.
Yeah.
And no, that is not a sports car, dear listeners. That is technically me, my lungs, and this howling device known as my throat. Anyway. So yeah, welcoming you to today's session, dear listeners, to the Home Run. And yeah. That's where we kick off.
We kick off with the discussion, you know, I think for the most part of this week, we have talked, or yeah, both I and we basically put this together, and more, for the most part, we have talked, you know, more into the tech world,
yeah.
And be it just a straight up tech as in AI, or, you know, tech as in energy generation.
But yesterday's discussion actually was based upon a political side of things, if you look at it from the other spirit. Because Grossi is actually going around
negotiating with
politicians,
yeah,
about the...
Because they're the ones that are behaving like a bunch of kindergarten kids.
Plus, they're also the ones that were literally in the Cold War era, the ones technically using... It was the proverbial sword that they were shaking around. You know, there's an expression that they call saber rattling.
Mm-hmm.
So saber rattling is when, back then, when people used to fight around with swords.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a bunch of guys still today somewhere in your societies. But anyway, saber rattling is when they would take a sword and they would hit against something.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like, you know, it's noise pollution. Yes. Like
to attract attention or something?
Or to startle the enemy or something like that.
More
medieval times, you would have a shield, and then they would hit the shields. So, if the shield was obviously made out of wood, you would hear a wooden rattling sound. That is rattling, not clubbing. Although the clubbing would end up with someone's anatomy being smashed in with a club.
Uh-huh.
The other one was also, where they would, there was another thing that they would also do. The howling and the shouting. Men shouting and howling, but a group of men shouting and howling. So, yeah.
Now, In the, you know, in the summit of the future, the International Energy Agency executive director, Fatih Birol, pointed out that one thing that we learned from, you know, one thing that we learned from COVID-19, collectively, the whole globe, and mostly in terms of, in terms of the war between Russia and Ukraine, in terms of energy, the European Union, or basically the EU, or, countries in that part of the world, one thing they learned is that, relying, whether it's just trade-wise, diplomatic-wise, or energy-wise, relying on one supplier or one trading partner is a bad idea.
Yeah.
So one of the things that was pointed out in terms of energy security is diversification. And this is diversification in terms of, have multiple sources of energy coming from different suppliers.
Mm.
Yeah, you can, and Fatih Birol basically say, literally says, don't put all your eggs, in one basket.
Yeah.
Now, that means, if that is the direction we're trying to take, that means a lot of diplomacy and less military conflict.
But it also comes down to a thing, Hamid, of, for example, if we look at where the world is today because of actions that happened in 2022. So what happened in 2022? And for the listeners, just to understand, this is actually what Helmut and I now busy sort of like laying out here is under, it's a particular picture that has come along for since 2022, 2023, that has come along, and it ultimately positions this new Namibian administration under this global climate.
Yeah.
So in 2022, Russia obviously, takes the two territories from
Ukraine,
from Ukraine, and they technically just bunker themselves down into those two territories. Those two territories then announcing their autonomy from the rest of Ukraine because they're predominantly Russian speaking, and from what I there's a lovely channel, there's a lovely YouTube channel known as it focuses on international relations as well, specifically the realm of geopolitics between countries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hosted by a German guy or an Austrian guy. I don't know which one he is, but I can hear from his accent.
Knowing those two.
Yeah. And he recently interviewed a German journalist, Mr. Patrick Babb. Yeah. P-A-A-B. Patrick Babb, who wrote a book about his excursions into Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
and talking, with multiple sides, even with the Russians at one stage. And what we keep hearing outside of the conflict, Helmut, is far from what he himself has written about in his books, have looked at, and his particular research he's done.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent that you even sit there wondering, why do we always see the negative publicity in the international relations realm persisting? Well, here's one thing. We are predominantly English-speaking, and we are exposed mostly to English-speaking news outlets internationally.
Which is mostly Western-dominated.
And which try to parrot or try to perpetuate, the same particular either misinformations or falsehoods, or sort of, in most cases, as well as also information that is just lacks any particular sound evidence in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt, obviously, that the conflict that Russia did move into Ukraine.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. The downside of that particular scenario has been, no one has taken the Americans to task for what they've done to Iraq. In Iraq, it is still estimated that the Iraq war has claimed more than 1 million people.
Yeah.
They have not taken any responsibility for what happened in Syria. They have not taken any responsibility for what has happened in Afghanistan. They have not taken any responsibility that has happened in, which is the other country? They're even not taking responsibility.
That list is a very long one.
No, they're not even taking responsibility for the 7 October 2023 conflict in Gaza.
Mm-mm.
Because on multiple sides, the Americans and the British and the Israelis do not want to admit that what they're committing is literally a genocide. Which is the opposite of what many of the leaders try to tell their populations. I mean, anyone out there just has to watch the recent documentary that Louis Theroux, the guy's name is actually Theroux, Louis Theroux did just now the other day with what's the woman's name? She's the sort of like the settler godmother. And the rhetoric the woman uses, literally, Helmut, should it makes the international relations realm so difficult.
No, I think I've listened to a few interviews of that woman. Ah, man, is she twisted?
Is it the old lady with the head cloth?
Okay, is the one that's I think ideologically. She's poisoned to the point where she doesn't apply rationale anymore.
She refuses to.
She's just, you know what? Well, God gave it to us, and we're gonna take it by all means.
Okay.
Yeah, and the language there is not very international relations friendly.
Yeah,
it's one that is one that is just how do I put this? Is what you'd what you'd actually expect in a world that's run by propaganda? Because you have to understand that before a military conflict breaks up, the first war starts from information.
It always does.
It always starts from, it always starts from information. So, one thing that you see is, if you look at, she's not the only one. She's not the only one.
Yeah.
Call it a social media tit for tat in one comment section of the videos. Mm-hmm. And, where one guy, what's going on in Palestine. And, one guy kept bringing up, a lot of them just comes in and then they just type October 7th.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as a response. The Israelis have been accused of having an army division. That's just in charge of social media. They're just going through what's going on social media and and then getting a debate of what everything associated with what's going on in Palestine.
Yeah.
So, most of the people that you are having a debate on the internet over what's going on in Palestine, especially the ones that you know that you can't reason with this one, most of them are either brainwashed or just straight up paid actors. So you are not going to reason with, with someone like that. But if you go back to, 2015, I'm not sure what position is occupying, that guy's occupying now. Smotrich. Last time I checked, he was there Israeli finance minister.
Mm.
Yeah. In one of his clips that you can still find on YouTube today, John Oliver used it in one of his evening shows, where the guy called Hamas an asset that will be used, in the project of internationally delegitimizing. Israel on an international stage, because if you can push them into a corner where they will have to fight back, then you can use their response and then run to the United Nations Security Council and tell the entire international community that, okay, look, we're just, how do you want a bunch of terrorists to be part, to be recognized by the UN? So he used he went to the point of calling, literally saying, in that case, Hamas is an asset.
Yeah.
So I just took that clip of him saying that, then just, put it under the comments. Bro never responded. Now, here's the thing. Most of the information, if you want to explain something to some of these guys, don't scratch your head. Take sources that are coming from their side of the story and then, I recommend it to him.
Mm.
But now when you look at, that's what's going on on an international, it's one of the most covered events. But then if you look at DRC, for example, It's another controversial, you know, it's another controversial discussion that obviously dates back to 1994. And both sides will tell you why the, you know, both sides can easily justify why they must, you know, why they are engaged in this conflict. And then you look at international bodies, international bodies like the United Nations, like at this point, Antonio Guterres, every time that he's talking about these things, you can almost feel pity for the guy because he looks like he's about to cry because you can genuinely see he doesn't want kids dying in the middle of a war zone, except the biggest players on a global stage fighting for global dominance, they're not listening to anyone. Now, when you look at international relations, you know, international relations is a subject that dates back to ancient times. Countries have always had allies, and that's for military purposes, allies for economic purposes, because you have to trade what you are producing with someone. Someone will have to consume your products if you want to be in business.
Or if it was like the art of war that I read.
Oh yeah, Sun Tzu.
And Machiavelli's The Prince. The earliest formats of an ambassador, they would call them emissaries or. What was the other word?
Oh, emissary was ambassador.
What was the other word they use also for that? But it was literally someone that was a representative of said head of state, where these individuals would be attached to the court of another king. So if you've got good bilateral relations with each other, an emissary of mine would be in your court to observe political developments. Military. It was usually about political and military developments. They didn't care about educational energy.
I know they didn't care. I mean, the literacy rate at the time.
I mean,
like the illiterate.
I mean, I only heard earlier today, Helmut, from Richard Wolff that growth and production, the metric used to measure growth and production in an economy, was only created in the 1940s.
So back then they were just, you know, staking the heck out of each other and then call it a day.
Or they were just inventing things and just, they didn't care about anything and there was no value. I mean, even the idea of GDP was supposedly only created just the other day. It's less than 100 years old. And for something like 200 years now of human societies, 200 years out of, let's say, 10,000 years of human society, for something like 10,000 years
of human society,
for the 200 years of the 10,000 years, it's the only time that we've actually, that economists came about this. Literally, out of the two. Okay, so sorry guys, we were busy here with some sign language for outside.
Yeah, it turns out we are terrible at it.
Yeah, very terrible. So for something like 200 years out of the 10,000 years of human society, we've literally only been able to actually articulate economics.
Even if you look it up, you know, the branch of economics itself is is a very new one because for a very long time, the branch of economics itself was very attached to a bunch of aristocrats and, you know, especially, to the nobility. Now, one thing is, this international relations discussion is one that goes to show that, human beings, as much as we hate each other, we can't live away from each other. We can't live without each other. Any country, no matter how big your economy is, it can't survive if you build a wall around it. Because, you know, for you to have a thriving economy, you must trade with someone. You must trade with someone. No country produces everything. So some of the things you'll have to import. Some of the things that you produce in large quantities, you'll have to export. Now, this trade is what is, you know, is what runs the economy. Well, when we were still, cavemen, all you cared about is I will have to go there and hunt and then, then call it a day. But if you're going to, if you are going to run institutions that are communicating and trading on a national level, let alone on a global level, you need friends. You need friends. Now, that's why every country needs either a foreign affairs office or ministry of, Ministry of International Relations in our case. So our Ministry of International Relations is one of those that has had different relations with different institutions or with different countries. If you look, take for example, even during the liberation struggle, plane fighters, got a lot of international assistance, whether it's from neighboring countries like Tanzania, Angola, Zambia, that required international communication. You need to communicate with the people that are in different countries, and so they can give you maybe a refuge for your people that are too vulnerable to be left in a war zone, especially women and children. So international relations then forms a bedrock of any country. Now, fatty barrels don't keep put your eggs. And he points out that not only in terms of energy, he also points out that whether it's energy or take for example your commerce, don't just have one supplier of a single product, and that's the best discussion to have in Namibia, because God forbid anything happened to the South African economy. Can you imagine us?
No, Helmut, I don't want to imagine
that. Thank you very much.
It'll be a nightmare, Helmut, that you're asking me to literally.
We would be cooked.
Yeah, we would be on both sides.
We would be,
inside and outside.
No, you're just making it worse.
Hey, man, the moment you bring in poetic language, I take it to the next level, to cloud nine, I automatically, what they call that thing, promoted the message, but.
Now, that brings us to the Namibian Ministry of International Relations and trade budget speech. Now, that's Selma Ashipala Musavi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. At least according to the pronunciations I went through before coming here.
Well, I'm a little bit afraid of that Y, that VYI. It might be Musavi or Musav.
Musavi. I just copied and pasted. So, So
I'm not even arguing. Yeah, so yeah, I'm just.
So you're not even attempting.
No.
Yeah. So that's in the budget speech, she goes on to point out a lot of things, both accomplishments, looking back. Current and and future of Namibia's international relations, especially diving into where we are headed in terms of international relations, as she speaks about deepening ties. Now, that was a word that I looked at and went like, looking at the going through the speech. One thing that kept running in my, running around in my head was, one of those events that took place back in 2017. Back in 2017, our country, 2016, 2017, our country was well dominated to, at least for a brief period of time, international media. Because of the two companies, North Korean companies that were operating in Namibia.
Mm.
Yeah. And operating in any other way. Okay. One was in mining. One was in military. Now you actually understand why every Western guy was going, yeah. And I like how the, you know, I like how, you know, how only the UN came out as the main concern. But if you look at, you know, who occupies the five seats of, majority of the five seats of the United Nations Security Council, then you know where this concern is coming from.
Yeah.
it's not rocket science. Now, one thing that, the article I'm looking at is from 2016, came out of the Namibian Sun. The Namibian Ministry and you know what, the International Relations Minister, the president was the International Relations Minister at the time. Namibia's Ministry of International Relations and Cooperation confirmed its termination of service for two North Korean companies who were involved in military projects in Namibia. Now, this was the current president speaking to the media, speaking to the media, largely because of international pressure. Now, this is one of those things where you see that liberation struggle fighters that led to the independence of Namibia were heavily involved in a lot of Eastern European and Asian countries in fighting for that independence. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that you see is that, all these countries, and this is true for a lot of African countries. Now, one thing that you see is that after each and every single one of these countries get their independence, then they shift really hard, both economically and politically, towards the West. And then now you are going,
I think the word you should use there is pivot.
You mean pivot. Oh, you mean pivot. Dude, I'm sorry, man. I had pivot. And it was like,
that's how you pronounce the word pivot. Not pervert.
You're saying it with verbosity. Now, the thing.
don't let me bring in the other one. Viscosity. With the force and viscosity. I was like, what? Force and viscosity?
Viscosity.
Yeah.
That's, fluid flow. Now, looking at that, that was 8 years ago, and one gentleman who was a political analyst that was interviewed at the time Namibia have to decide how it wants to maneuver around geopolitical sensitivities. Unfortunately, geopolitical sensitivities is the order of the day in international relations. Now, in the recent visit of, in the recent meeting between the president, our president and the North Korean ambassador, you guys don't know where to draw the line. Let me explain that part.
Are you sure that guy was a North Korean ambassador?
That's according to these documents here. Where's that?
Wait, Albert. Because I'm about to laugh now.
I know.
I read the messaging, but I didn't pay much attention.
Oh, dear.
Because I was focusing on develop, obviously, health risk and all. But yeah. I was paying attention mostly to, the aspect of my personal health.
No, the first question I asked myself is, hang on a second, we have a North Korean embassy?
No, we don't.
Okay, yeah, now.
we're not supposed to meet, they're not supposed to have missions.
The guy's name is Jong Song the II. Now, just laugh. Look.
I can't laugh, Helmut, that's the thing, I can't laugh.
I know. Now, why am I saying you media guys are annoying? Now, this is the part that, when asked whether whether there were plans to revive the construction project, the NDF projects that generated a lot of media attention back in, that led to the termination of those companies operating in Namibia back in 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah. However, construction on the when asked whether there were plans to revive this construction project, John called it a very sensitive issue, declining to provide further details. Now, the way things are looking, anyone that has been, anyone that has been friends to, friends with Cuba, North Korea, or basically anyone that the West deems very not friendly, have always, in one way or another, faced backlash.
Look, Cuba is nothing, Almut.
I know.
I think Namibia and South Africa, and I think Angola.
Yeah.
I think we're one of the few that have Cuban missions. On the African continent. But North Korea is literally like, it's like Superman running around what's the thing's name? Kryptonite that makes him weak.
Oh yeah.
So it's North Korean relations are kryptonite. I have to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I don't even think South Africa wants to be that maverick. I'm sorry.
I mean, you sound 90.
not even South Africa with its maverickness would even dare. But yeah, obviously, it seems to be the first sort of like engagement. But yeah, you were still saying, Amut. You were still saying.
Yeah, that's the first thing that when I was going through this whole report, especially page 4 to 7, I couldn't help ask myself. I'm like, okay, first of all. Geopolitics in terms of global dominance is, we can see it in real time, like Richard Wolff likes to point out, that it's shifting towards the East. Now, the question I couldn't help ask myself was, is this the reason why why we are witnessing these things? Because if you look at it, there are 5 United Nations, Security Council members.
Yeah.
West, you're talking about Russia, UK, the US. And then East, West, you're looking at France, UK, and the US.
Yeah.
Now, East, you're looking at China and Russia. Now, one thing these two groups, the 3 in the West and the 2 in the East have been seen to do a lot in the UN Security Council is that, when it comes to anything about the, if the UN wants to take any negative decision against North Korea, either Russia or China is most likely to veto that decision.
Yeah.
When the United Nations wants to carry out any negative decision against Israel, the three US, UK and France are most likely in most cases, all of them are most likely to veto that decision. So, you have on this planet, you have 2 countries that are not members of the UN, but they are more protected in the United Nations Security Council than the UN. So, Israel is a member of the UN.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, they are not.
It's only North Korea that's
They are not. They don't have a seat on the UN Security Council, but they are both. It's actually the beauty of knowing a guy who knows a guy.
No, but Israel is the more powerful one because Israel influences
the entire West.
The entire West.
Yeah.
And that's some of the things that the West is only now waking up to, realizing that a lot of their countries are throwing resources to the protection of the small country that's doing its own thing. But still, the discussion, obviously, Helmut, is one based upon where does Namibia go in this new administration with international relations? Remember, because our president was the international relations minister.
Yeah.
Before she became, obviously, vice president. Yeah, last year. And now we obviously have a new minister, but now part of her portfolio now is trade. which, like you and I have said before, the only reason why countries have bilateral relations with each other is that they wish to take that relationship to the next level to include trade. And from the trade thing, you develop far more mutually beneficial ties with each other so that you can take things forward. For example, look at South Africa and Namibia, Namibia and Germany, Namibia and Botswana, Namibia and Zambia. They are all mutually beneficial to both sides.
Yeah.
And there is also a mutual respect indicator on both sides for the other side. The discussion out of here, for example, like countries like Namibia and the EU as well, because Namibia and the EU is starting to grow a lot tighter, very closer.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's through the help, obviously, of the Germans, and obviously also of the Belgians, and also of the Dutch, and now the Spanish are now, you know, every year hosting climate change things here with us, and I'm like, ay doch. You know, you've got the same bush. We have that bush here. You have the same sun. We have more of that sun here. What do you want to tell us?
Fish. Sorry. Never visiting Spain, am I?
No, Helmut. And I think you threw me under that same bus as well. There.
Yeah.
But yeah. So the aspect of mutual respect has been there. The other consideration obviously has been something like the development that Namibia brought in with the reciprocity under the former Minister of Home Affairs,
Gawana, with regards to visas.
In terms of the visas, which has actually been a boon. Many people thought, and many experts from the tourism sector actually said that would become a boomerang effect with a negative.
Yeah, there was the tourism industry.
With a negative effect. Just for when you and I did that tourism discussion at the start of, when, you know, after that 18 million. That they made since February to March.
Yeah.
When you and I had the discussion that they made 18 million in less than 30 days.
And everyone was like,
18 million in less than 30 days.
And, one thing. We're still, you know, a textbook example of what to do in the tourism industry globally.
Yeah, because everyone seems to be doing this. Having e-visas available and all that gives the person ease of access to book, to plan and to get this thing scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, that was a Home Affairs thing, which feeds into an international relations thing. Because if you don't have an embassy of Namibia in a country, it makes things difficult because usually things were like, you have to go and contact your embassy or a country's embassy in that country in order to consult and ask them, listen, what do I need to do if I wish to visit Namibia or if I wish to visit your country for that matter? Now, the downside here is, Helmut, China is the world's second largest economy, but Namibians can't fly directly to China and Chinese can't fly directly to Namibia. You still need to go there under like special visa arrangements, meaning you have to apply for a visa.
Mm-hmm.
But before we actually continue, guys, we've got a short break coming up, and we'll be back right after that.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family, Vintook Lemon Flavored Non-Alcoholic Beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook Lemon Flavored Non-Alcoholic Beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 16 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and the topic is international relations with regards to Namibia, and according to our own constitution, we have to form international relations, and we actually abide by international laws, and Article 144 of the Namibian Constitution says, and I quote, unless otherwise provided by this Constitution or Act of Parliament, the general rules of public international law and international agreements binding upon Namibia under this Constitution shall form part of the law of Namibia. So, no country is an island. Now, where were you?
Okay, so I'm just going to extract directly from the minister's speech that she had back on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Now, the minister noted this is in her 16th paragraph on page 4 of her motivation, which is also dubbed as her maiden speech. Uh-huh. Dun, 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 dun. You know, our most feared word here on the Home Run, because we don't like that thing of maiden speech. Now, anyway, she notes, the Ministry of International Relations and Trade plays a pivotal role in advancing Namibia's foreign policy, fostering diplomatic relations and enhancing trade and investment opportunities. Our mandate is to promote Namibia's interests globally while ensuring that our economic diplomacy contributes to national prosperity. So, just in that specific paragraph, the minister's already saying, when we engage with a country, with another country, the aim is that there is some sort of economic benefit that needs to be incurred, that needs to be developed, that needs to be. You can't just have relations for the fun of it. You can't just say, you know, you said in absentia. Into the void, yeah.
Someone pointed out that these days, I think it was a lady on social media that pointed out that these days you just, I think we were laughing about it this other day, that these days you just, meet someone and then ask for their number and then become each other's status viewers.
Yeah, so I saw another girl also say that on her status. She says, what does she say? Don't ask my number for the sake of just asking. I've got enough status viewers.
At this point, WhatsApp should monetize status viewing.
No.
So you don't want to be that as a country. You want, you want some mutual benefit to come out of the, out of your relationship.
If I have to single out countries that literally are like that with Namibia, I put Norway, Sweden, and Denmark in that collective. Namibia has, we do have embassies an embassy with Finland,
mm-hmm.
But as I sometimes get told, on the social media platform, specifically on YouTube, the Finns don't consider themselves part of Scandinavia. And I was like, okay.
Really?
But I was like, okay. So the other three main guys specifically, because if you even ask yourself, Helmut, how did Namibia strike a trade deal with a company from Iceland for fishing? You know, that's obviously now referring to the fish rot scandal in Namibia.
Yeah.
How does a country that Namibia has no bilateral relations with allow a company from that country to participate in Namibia's resource extraction? So that ultimately should be also an indicator in terms of saying, you know what, if as such, and I mean, how many people do Iceland have? They're like 500,000 people. 500,000 to 300,000 people.
Really?
Iceland has
population less population that small.
Iceland has less people than Windhoek.
No kidding.
Yeah, I can see you googling it. Just
and by the way, Iceland doesn't have any ice. Greenland has all the ice.
Yeah, and Greenland is not green.
It's not green.
And Greenland is bigger than Iceland,
Jesus. And
not on the map, in terms of actual size.
Oh, like, so,
don't think
like...
of the map size, because the map is a distortion as well. It was known as the Mercator maps.
Mercator projection, yeah.
Yeah. Where they pulled at the top of the maps, and we as Africans were made so tiny. Yeah.
Oh man.
Reykjavik is even less people than, I think, Ochevarongo even.
It's 2025 census. 389,000.
They have less people than Windhoek. Less people than Windhoek.
Yeah, those are the guys that came here buying for us, you know, iPhones with two SIM cards. But the way these things are going, if you look at... I mean, these things have, you know how we like to tell ourselves, no, we don't have a big enough population and stuff. Yeah. You know, let that sink in. So it's about, diplomacy and, you know, thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
Basically.
Now, the minister also added on after that specific paragraph, which he said, with the addition of international trade and investment to the ministry, it will help to coordinate our economic diplomacy in a more meaningful way as we continue to position Namibia as a competitive player in the global marketplace, ensuring that our local products and services access African and international markets and that we beneficiate our raw materials before they are exported in line with AU decisions. Now, just in that one paragraph, Helmut, I get to understand why the mergers of certain ministries took place. For example, Ministry of Justice is in charge of the courts. No, that's the judiciary. But Ministry of Justice is in charge of technically everything related to the law, to the constitution, to acts, and anything that looks like a law or an act in its own right. And Ministry of Labor sat with a bunch of labor laws detached from Ministry of Justice. And ultimately now it seems like Ministry of Justice has to take over that role in terms of, okay, let's help interpret the role of labor law in Namibia in order for the beneficiation of Namibia. Now, I am highlighting that assumption because it's my assumption, because why would you, and it's the president, she did elaborate it in her inauguration speech when she, and no, not the inauguration speech, it was the next day's speech, the speech when she introduced the cabinet, where she highlighted specifically that the Ministry of Labor, the labor laws should be of a benefit to the Namibian labor market, and that Ministry of Justice is supposedly the best position or the best entity to champion that particular directive. The second scenario is obviously the one that the president also noted, that poverty is a cross-cutting issue and all ministries have to look after their responsibility pertaining towards, you know, poverty alleviation in Namibia.
Yeah.
Because I am looking at things like in the United States where, because of Trump's tariffs, so many Americans are jumping onto social media and saying they now have to lay off people. They're just speaking of layoffs because no customers are buying their products because of the tariffs and the products.
That also factored into the product prices.
Yeah, the product price has changed. The things have now become more expensive because the customers are buying an Asian made or a Chinese made thing, which is cheaper than an American made thing. And now the prices went up. Now the customers say, I'm not going to buy it anymore.
Okay, fine. I'm not going to buy it.
Now, if you,
and the cost of living was already worse before the tariffs.
Yeah, but that's a totally different discussion for them. It's not like with us. You see, our cost of living, Helmut, is associated to specifically because for far too long we have that has most been the thing that that we were told since high school when I did my development studies subject. Namibia has missed the opportunity to invest a lot in the secondary and in the tertiary industries. So primary sector, where you dig up the diamond. No. Wrong reference. The primary sector, let's say, where you dig up the copper. Ne? Because Namibia did mine copper, and we still have copper deposits in this country.
Yeah.
Namibia, you dig up the copper, and instead of putting the copper now on a train or on a truck for the port at Walvis Bay to be shipped somewhere else, you take the copper to the copper smelter or to the smelting plant, which was the guys in Grootfontein. No, not in Tsumeb, sorry. Before they were, which they are now sold to a Chinese outfit as well. And from that smelter, it then goes to, and you're still in the secondary industry, ne?
Yeah.
Because you're going from extraction to refining. From refining, you're now going into what, whoever does or manufacture with copper, whatever they're going to do, whether it's copper wiring or copper whatever, or copper utensils or copper instruments or copper, you know, parts, whoever in the value addition component, they're going to buy copper for their specific needs.
Yeah.
And they make their stuff. And then the copper gets, and then that made copper product, that either factors in as a component part, or it factors in as a finished part, or it is literally the final product. And then it gets sold on either to a consumer directly, or it gets sold on to another business, that needs to use the copper product for something else. Since we didn't invest much in second and in tertiary sectors, Namibia only has primary, and we jump all the way to service.
Shortcut.
That's why our banks are so strong. That's why we're so heavy on tourism. That's why we're so heavy on health. That's why we're so heavy on the service provision sector. Namibians know how to provide service, which you also have to take with a large glass of vodka or gin or whatever alcoholic beverage you're drinking, because some service standards have really dropped in Namibia. But still, we know about the service sector. What we don't know about is how to make the things.
We know how to use the equipment, so we don't know how to make them.
Or we've got very few guys. I mean, how much just to sit in that automotive discussion that you and I had? Sitting in, because I came back most a little bit later from that particular event. I came in just after lunch. Now, just before lunch, between 12 and 1, we were sent into a breakaway session, because I thought, where's the media? We thought we could break away and go come back to the office and, you know, submit the content that we gathered. No, they said, no, please, use the media. You are also needed, because we want to know your insights in terms of how Namibia and Lesotho can benefit from the automotive value chain and the sector overall.
Yeah.
And then I explained there to, a guy from the private sector explained that there are companies like him who have to make products for a lot of these cars in Namibia that are brought in by the South Africans.
Mm-hmm.
Because Namibians believe in driving the thing until it literally decays or disintegrates or something. We believe in driving like that.
Yeah.
We use it to its fullest extent. We utilize it.
Yeah, we also, okay, look, it starts when the car is new, you know, are you familiar with the theory of I know my car?
No,
in terms of fuel gauge.
No, but Helmut, here's the thing that I was told by my sister that worked for Sony South Africa. She said the Japanese boss they had there he asked the staff, what do we do for, but the question was based upon, what do you do to get the customers to buy, new
product,
technology?
Yeah.
And my sister tells me, she still tells me this joke, like a joke. Because the reaction she got from the guy was like, no, you're supposed, every time when there's new technology, you have to convince the customer to bring in the old technology and then buy the new technology. But we as Africans, we don't do that. We say, nah, like literally the phone I had last year. Mm. Remember the one that I told you after I came back from Russia?
Mm-hmm.
The screen and things were starting to fall out from each other because the phone was not used to a Russian winter. Not that even the Russians said that was winter. Even they even told me, this is supposed to be our spring.
Man.
You know, this is like a breeze in the park. And then all of us Africans came back there with all kinds of forms of bronchitis and sinusitis and all those other weird things that you experienced because we didn't know such cold. So what happened to that phone only forced me back in November last year to buy this phone. Literally, I started seeing the screen and the back cover starting to divorce each other every time I lift it and I tilt it slightly.
Then, so every time you wake up, you have to, you know, you have to reassemble the phone before you start using it.
Basically. So in that scenario, it's not supposed to, that's not what consumerism is supposed to be. You don't buy the thing after you've broken it.
Yeah.
You don't buy something new after you've broken the previous thing of it.
You're supposed to buy, you know, something new every time it comes out.
Yeah, and you return the old technology.
You return the old technology to be disposed of or to be
recycled and to be repurposed, and then it falls.
Yeah, that takes care of the waste because that's where I said it.
Yeah, but that's not what is happening in Namibia even, because we don't even have an electric, a consumer waste, not policy. You don't even need a policy. You just need an operator there that takes care of what happens to an old computer, what happens to an old TV, what happens to the remotes, the batteries, all those things. Zero. You just drive to Kupferberg, to the dump site, and you'll find all those things lying there. Smashed up, broken open, and just lying there. Now the downside is, as Namibia, we don't even utilize, for the 3 million Namibians we are, we don't even utilize a ripe opportunity to even develop a sector based off of waste. I almost said human waste. There is a sector based off human waste. It helps with feeding the sports fields across Namibia.
Next time you know
it's not compost.
Next time you kiss the next time you kiss the pitch after scoring.
Please don't, guys.
It's a good picture to have in mind.
I mean, the first thing when I moved here to Namibia. Now, I know in Rio Bosnia, the farmers used to donate to the schools, for the fields.
Like the manure.
They used to donate the cow manure.
Yeah.
But it was obviously now dried up and it was now packaged in bags, which is easy to transport. And then all the boys had to do during their PE lessons was distribute this
manure. It's one way to do PE. Seriously?
You know, sometimes when you think back on high school, and then you go like, it says some of these teachers were just mean, bruh. They either just saw you as cheap labor, or they saw you as the go-to labor resource to do most of the things.
Transporter.
Or sometimes even just to be the, the couriers of many things between lessons. So yeah, when I come here to Windhoek, when I move here to Windhoek, the first thing I realized when I saw the same, you know, scenario happened here, was that they were using human waste from Koreanghap Dam as fertilizer for the sports fields in Windhoek and the schools specifically. There was one designated supplier. I just don't know if that person
supplier.
Yeah, it was the guy had a business from there.
Man.
I never met the
genius guy.
I never met the guy because all I know is that my alma mater, St. Thomas High School, at one stage bought from this guy for the soccer field because there was no soccer field anymore.
It's now maybe just they stopped supplying the guy's business, but it's a good fertilizer though. I mean, it works as long as you just don't tell the players that. So
not really, Helmut. Look,
does it give you allergies or something?
No, it stinks profoundly bad.
Oh, well, at least when you at least process it, add some air freshener in there.
How, Helmut?
Huh?
How?
Well, buy air freshener, mix it up.
If I tell you that,
you're telling me they just spray it in like that?
If I tell you beef manure, fertilizer, has a better odor. Even when you switch on the sprinklers there to water the grass, has a better odor than fertilizer made from human waste.
Oh, there's one guy at my high school that used bets. The flying thing at night.
Oh, yeah.
Not to witch. There's a different one. But that'll be a different fertilizer. But okay.
I think this fertilizer discussion is going on.
Yeah, yeah.
We're now on bat.
Yeah. Look, bro took, because bats, you know, they poop a lot because some, you know, they were living, you know, they like to find, if they find any, you know, any gap, they, you know, they get in the ceilings.
Yeah.
So they were living in a ceiling in one of the classes and then they, I think they lived there for a very long time and the ceilings could not, you know, could, was not strong support.
So it was accumulating on one spot.
Yeah, it was accumulating and it was, the ceiling was not strong enough to support, you know, the weight.
Yeah.
So the whole thing buckles.
Yeah.
And then bro thought, he thought, I think, out of the kindness of his heart, that all bats, or basically all birds, have, you know, eat the same thing. And then he tried to, you know, he just, the good thing is he just used a portion of it, and then applied it to a portion of the lawn. Boy, that grass died. Like, it was, it all, first of all, turned yellow, and it was stinking like crazy. That's where we learn that if you want to apply fertilizer,
probably highly acidic.
Okay. Before you,
or highly alkaline.
What's the diet of that animal before you start considering using it?
Yeah.
You know, using its manure for fertilizer.
I remember I asked that specific question. I know we are on a completely different.
I know international relations to bed poop. Nice.
So, but it's actually a trait component that we're highlighting. The downside has been, Helmut, that I don't remember who I asked that question of, but I asked that question, now, can you make fertilizer out of any kind of animal waste or human waste? And the person I asked that question of was the wrong authority, actually, because that person had nothing scientific on their name.
Oh.
But the person said no. All they know is that you either have access to cattle or cattle pens,
yeah,
or goats, even. Goats are also supposedly good. You know, collecting their manure and then obviously making, you know, fertilizer out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one has been humans, obviously. But humans was, the human one is obviously was now highly treated because they use those.
Yeah, throwing plumbing also. That's the problem.
Yeah. So they use those treatment plants and treatment facilities and the chemicals applied to the thing.
And also the products that are, I mean, the products that we use on a daily basis that ends up in the same area.
Yeah. So, yeah. I just knew when I moved here in 1999, it was one guy that ran a business from there. That was his business plan, you know, selling human waste for fertilizer purposes, for your sports facilities.
And I'm saying it so well.
It was a wonderful idea, but I just don't know.
The thought of it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So getting back, we were still on the labor discussion, the mergers of these ministries, and specifically that you've got to look at the new role that Ministry of International Relations has. Now, Helmut, here's something that actually I'm very surprised of. The statement I made a little bit earlier about the perceived win that Minister of Home Affairs scored with the
regards to e-visas,
with the e-visa, in terms of revenue generation, because remember that number that I worked
and convenience for travelers.
Yeah, remember that number that I calculated there, that 18 million over 12 months.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a significant amount. I mean, it was 216 million that Namibia would be making directly just from e-visa applications. And that 18 million.
Oh, would that be like annually?
Okay. I take 18 times 12.
Yeah.
So, because I worked it from February to February next year, or February to January next year. And the assumption is it is still on the same rate of applications as observed by the Ministry of Home Affairs itself.
Yeah.
Because here's the first thing that e-visa actually does. Okay, besides us now seeing the North Koreans coming back into the equation.
International relations, check.
Whether or not they use the e-visa system, that is another question.
That's a diplomat, so.
Yeah, that's a diplomat. That guy came through diplomatic channels.
Yeah.
When we look at this particular subject matter, the question has to now resonate with the efforts that the former minister Kawana did for Home Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
What he did with this reciprocity in this e-visa discussion, developing, rolling it out, introducing it, motivating it, it now looks like a win because the experts in the tourism industry in Namibia were complaining, how could you come and do this, bring in this e-visa, this visitation,
you know,
reciprocity.
Experts can also get things wrong.
And then just for the executive director of the Minister of Home Affairs, what's the guy's name? Eugene Marais. Is Eugene Marais? I forget the guy's name.
Totally forgot that guy's name. I remember reading his story, you know, him talking about the e-visas and the revenue they made in that, you know, the good revenue they made in that short period of time.
But
I think this is the part where you can, you know, you really have to give, former minister, you know, Albert Kaona, former minister of Home Affairs, Safety and Security. You know, a lot of heads off because, you know, the time that everything was implemented, Eugene, bro just baptized someone.
No, Eugene Marie is someone else. It's someone else.
Yeah. So the time, you know, the implementation was somewhat of a very risk for someone that was getting out of office. Mm. Had something gone wrong, boy, oh boy. The criticism, you never hear the end of it. Mm. But now that something is, you know, something positive have come out of it. And, at this point, I think it's safe to say even the experts that were predicting doom and gloom are glad to see that things didn't go doom and gloom. And,
it literally even scored a win.
Yeah.
Because it's money. It's direct money.
Yeah.
That the ministry is making. For the government.
Infinity money glitch.
Helmut. And we are assuming that it's on that 18 million rate per month. It could even spike. Remember, the European guys or much of the European tourists are now going to go into their summer holidays, which is going to start from this May into August.
Yeah.
And do you know that in Europe, they have a 3-month holiday?
3-month summer.
Holiday.
Holiday as in school?
For you working. Holiday. Holiday. You, your wife, your child.
3 months.
Holiday.
Of not working.
Of not working.
You'll forget how to open Microsoft. Some of these guys, I don't trust them. But, look.
Well, okay, some industries obviously would still be working.
Yeah.
But,
health, for example, those sounds
good. Yeah, and obviously some of like their manufacturing, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I keep watching a lot of these YouTube videos that pop up in terms of Europe versus American perceptions about each other. And one American who stayed in Europe was like, he can't understand how Europe has, they allow their workers to take a month off during summer, that 3-month period that I mentioned, or that 4-month period that I referenced, to go on holiday. And that's literally all that these guys are doing.
Well, look, for someone to be, okay, for someone, and this is very simple, I think, this is very basic psychology.
Yeah.
Sanity is required for one to be productive at what they do.
Yeah.
If they're always distracted, for example, if there's something going on home, you know, going on at home, and, it's very easy for that, for that tension and anger coming out of there to spill onto some colleagues, just, smooth things out.
Yeah.
I think, how do they pull that off? Maybe when you reach that level of economic, that level of economic achievement, and 3 months.
Okay, Helmut, I mean, if you get paid what, even just €1,000 a month, €1,000 is 20,000 Namibian dollars. Direct conversion.
Yeah, but some of those guys have heavy taxes. Yo.
Yeah, so that your child goes to free university.
Yeah.
So that you and your child can enjoy dependable public transport systems.
Your
hospitals are for free. Do you know that?
Yeah. That's what Americans go there and they go to the doctor and they're treated and they go like, okay, fine. If you are good, you will have a good day. Then like, okay, how much am I paying? Nothing.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, you're tricking me, right? Like, nope.
I mean, they even found out in the UK for the NHS in the UK, the one guy thought he had to pay something because he found a cashier in this hospital. He broke a leg or something and he wanted to pay. So, and they told him, no, we are here to refund you your transport money that you had to take to come here. They couldn't believe it.
Come again?
Yep. There was a cashier to refund you for the transport money you spent to get to the hospital.
Right.
And that was even in the UK. And the UK is going through its particular own cost of living crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Hence the reason why I also told you that it's a little bit different from us than it is to them, because in our discussion, we missed the second and the tertiary industries in Namibia. Because if we complain about the inequality of opportunities or access to or lack of access to opportunities, that's just what that report said back in 2022. That World Bank report about Southern Africa, they noted that it's because there's a lack of access to opportunities. So what are these opportunities derived from? These opportunities are derived from if you have various installations in your economy. Now, yes, the minister, Minister Ashipala Musavi, highlights that the diplomacy should achieve economic, tangible results on the ground.
Yeah.
The downside is, Helmut, we are once again echoing the same message that for 35 years has been the same message and the same drill up until today. Meaning, we will continue looking at foreign investors to invest in our country, leading to opportunities, perceived opportunities for locals. But a foreign investor like you and I have already always continuously hammer on this point. They come and they see what is the return on investment capability.
Yeah.
If you don't have oil, they won't come. If you don't have gas, they won't come. If you don't have cheap electricity, they won't come. What is cheap electricity? That is another particular perception that has to be identified. Because if you convert 3 Namibian dollars, whatever, for 1 kilowatt hour.
Electricity prices right now is becoming a boogeyman for investors, really.
Yeah, because, I mean, it looks weird if you have 100 Namibian dollars and for every 100 Namibian dollars you get 66 units or 70 units.
No, that's just for domestic. Imagine industrial.
Yeah, no, but they will use that same metric. They will use that same metric. Remember that?
No, I mean in terms of energy consumption.
Exactly. But here's the only clients that exist in Namibia.
Yeah.
So the only clients that exist in Namibia for NamPower are the local authorities, the regional electricity distributors, and the mines. So the mines can negotiate directly a rate.
Mm-hmm.
The REDs can negotiate a rate. And the only local authority that are not under an RED is Comas and the guys Karas and Hardap, because the RED that they had in Kietmans for the south, that guy was collapsed back in 2018. They just stopped operating. They had to close doors and stuff. Or it was 2019, one of the 2 years. That guy was collapsed. Mm-hmm. So there is no RED in southern Namibia. Now, that then means that these local authorities can negotiate directly with NamPower on direct. Now, if you use that metric of 100 Namibian dollars and you get like 66 units, which is supposedly your 66 kilowatt per hour.
Kilowatt per hour?
My metric is a
kilowatt hour.
Kilowatt hour, yeah. Okay. Let's just say units. Let's just stay on units.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Let's just say power units. They will use that same metric. Now, where are most manufacturing complexes or manufacturing
installations
placed? They're placed in urban settings. You don't have a factory out there in the bush, Helmut. Because that factory has to know where it can pull water from and where it can pull electricity from.
Yeah.
And it wants to know where its labor force is going to come from. That's why you build a factory close to an urban center. Or if the factory is at a farm, like it's like a food production, food manufacturing plant, it's going to be close to the resource because there's already a labor resource, meaning there's already people working on picking the, harvesting the product. And then you've got another contingent of people that are working in the factory. And that will be based close to a small farming community. It's the same thing with the fish factories at the coast. They're close to the fishing, they're close to the coastal towns because they know that's where the port facility is, the resources out there in the sea, and the labor force lives here in the town. So, Bob's your uncle. Everything is sorted for you. The downside is just when you try to look at expanding this thing, you have to do this. You have to use literally what I explained now, those formats, looking at your resource, looking at your labor resource, looking where you can position it and, you know, the transport hub or transport interconnectivity. And then you got to look at where your electricity and water is going to come from. Now, if you're going to be a place like at one stage when Swakop and Walvis Bay were using that desalination plant's water, which smelled foul, tasted foul as well. But now I heard back in 2023, back in 2023, the last time I was in Swakop. The last time I was in Swakop was last year. Yeah. Back then, they're using underground water, borehole water to supply for residential use. In Swakop?
Not the desalinated one anymore.
No. That desalination one was back in the early 2000s. And I hated that water back then. That water was awful. I'm sorry, Swakop and Buffers, but that water was awful.
Okay,
I mean, we even made a joke. Just pinch your nose and just swallow the water. Okay, then you won't taste it.
Okay, but this was, sea water, right? Just treated. More like you're basically running it through distillation. And then you collect the water and so the salt is left behind. Or how the heck were they treating it?
No. I haven't looked up how a desalination plant actually works. But the thing is, if that desalination plant was the one that was owned by the uranium company, Areva. The French company. And that back then, there were media reports that Areva wanted to sell that to the Namibian government for a...
whopping.
Super price.
Yep.
I think it was like something like 2 billion or a billion.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back then. I mean, that price obviously would have skyrocketed by now, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, factoring in inflation, that's for sure.
That too, yeah.
Let me steal something from the minister's speech on economic diplomacy. Economic diplomacy, by the way, is leveraging international collaboration to unlock opportunities for Namibian businesses and attract foreign direct investment. Now, if you have been confused as to why, take for example, the American military is running around everywhere. One thing that you see is that they are there to defend American interests.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying we should, even if we had the military capability to do that, because, one model that was just set up by China have proven that you can actually, you can build a thriving economy without invading a single country. It's, again, that one is, it's the best example to use in this one because it's entirely based on diplomacy, negotiations. You benefit, I benefit. Like, Yanis Varoufakis uses his example of one of their main port when he took over for that brief period. Period as a minister, as a minister of finance, and found that, well, his predecessor signed some very lopsided contract with a Chinese-based company. So he hopped on a plane, went to China, negotiated, and they were like, okay, fine, we'll change it.
They even said it, no, it's cool.
Okay, fine, you'll change it. What else would you like us to change? And it was like, okay, you know what, subcontracting, you also have to limit on that one. And, gave his, contributed his terms, and they agreed, and to this day, they're still in business. Now, if it was one of those things of, well, you signed the contract, well, we can't change it. I'm sorry, we're just going to abuse you. And if you say no, we'll just send in some guys to cause some kind of destabilization. Now, again, one thing that you see is every country has an economic model. Like Larry Fink points out that, growth plan is something that every country wants. I mean, every country needs including the developed ones. Mm. Because if you look at developmental wise, a lot of developing countries are showing a lot of significant growth in terms of economy, you know, in terms of economic growth. But then there's some kind of, there's one thing that's being observed in a lot of developed countries, that there's some kind of stagnation or reversal going on.
Yeah.
So, which is a very scary picture to look at in terms of, for a country that's also facing one of the, you know, one of every country's biggest fear, declining in population. And a declining population, especially the youth population, because that's the future workforce. Because you reviving your, reviving your economy will mean, means you need a workforce.
Mm.
If you don't have a workforce, and you live in a part of, in a region where you have a declining, you have a declining population and declining economic progress, you have a very dark picture of the next 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Now, let's round it up with the, sum it up with the Peugeot example now, shall we? Every country is good at producing something. Everything that we are going to produce, there is someone who is consuming that particular something. And no country produces everything, so obviously you'll have to import something. Mm. The biggest part is not to become a master consumer, because, well, sooner or later you learn the hard way, basically what the Americans are finding out right now, because they shifted a lot of their manufacturing, their manufacturing bases out of the U.S., Now, when you look at why most of the, those manufacturing bases moved, that's where lawmakers now comes in. So, operation cost obviously plays a significant role in the, in a price of, of a product or service that's provided.
Mm.
So, every business person understands the basics of how business operates. If the operation cost is high, that means the product of that prices of product of that service will also be high. That raises the question of who is going to afford it. Because if no one can afford it, no one is going to buy it, and you don't have any business. Which is why, take for example, our fancy devices that we use today, especially for those of you that like Apple products. If Apple relocated 100% of its, 100% of its, manufacturing base back to the US, with the current US, labor laws, how much do you think one Apple phone would cost, factoring in the price of everything from salary to operation?
The fear is that it might cost $3,000. So that would make that phone cost like 60,000 in Namibian.
Okay.
Yeah, it was no joke. No, I watched that whole interview on CNN. What's the lady's name? She interviewed an economist guy, but it was a guy that's a specialist in logistics and supply chain. And she asked him, and he's the guy that gave the statement also to say that it'll take Apple just in the next 5 years
to move 10% of
just move 10% of the whole supply chain into the United States. And then that iPhone will literally cost $3,000. The reason why
factor in all the, levies and everything that builds up to the price that we are seeing here in Namibia. If it's 3K, which is $60,000 in the US, how much do you think it's going to cost in Namibia?
No. $3,000 in the US. If you convert that $3,000 to Namibia, it's $60,000 in Namibia. Helmut, this Samsung has a global price, one price tag. So my Samsung, if it costs, let's say $200 in the US, this specific phone, then it'll cost its $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000 in Namibia.
Okay, but that would mean their competitors, like pretty much every phone manufacturing company, will just put them out of business because no one in their right mind will buy. They don't have customers. But before we continue, quick break.
Are you ready for a fresh new flavor? Then enjoy the latest addition to the Vintook beer family. Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer. It's got the same taste that you love, but now with added lemon flavor to guarantee 100% refreshment in every sip. Now that's 100% real. Head to your nearest store and enjoy the new Vintook lemon flavored non-alcoholic beer for yourself today. Vintook, real beer for real people.
Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. It's 6 o'clock on the dot. That obviously brings us to rounding things up here on Eagle FM, and that is here on Home Run on Eagle FM. Now, the international relations that we want to build, we have been having conversations about deepening ties with a lot of countries that is not, you know, that are considered by the West as, you know, that the West basically, most of which are our, you know, developmental partners and trading partners would not recommend. You remember last year when we were talking about, Iran proposed a deal, to sell us steel at a discount. And you and I, you pointed out that it's, how about we just, because we already have the product that, you know, that they were offering, all we just have to do is work on processing after mining it, you know, with value addition and everything. You recommended that, how about we start with, tourism. But now, looking at the rising tensions between the, you know, the US and the Iran, at this point, I'm on the side of Iran because, well, I mean, if you give nuclear weapons to a guy that hates me, you can't come and tell me that I can't build nuclear weapons because, well, like, where's the sense in that?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, one thing that you see is that, we are seeing, I think, at least I started observing this last year. We're seeing Namibia, coming up with a closer, you know, coming closer and closer and cozier with countries like Iran. And this, you see the same thing, especially with regards to Iran. You see the same thing with South Africa. And, with the North Korean ambassador's visit, I mean, I watched that and go, and started going, global power really is shifting. Global power is really shifting. But, like that political analyst pointed out in the whole, international pressure of letting two North Korean companies that were operating in Namibia to leave back in 2016-17. One thing that, one thing this basically raised to, comes to is geopolitics is a chessboard. Henry Kissinger liked to point out, there are no permanent friends, then there are no permanent enemies. Yep. The only thing that's permanent is interest.
Yep. And obviously how that interest gets
channeled.
How that interest gets channeled. So that's where diplomacy becomes very, very, very key.
Sometimes it shows up there in military fatigues.
But look, I like the 21st century diplomacy, at least from my point of view. And that is because, unless, high class individuals in different countries are still practicing the medieval European way of cementing ties, where, a bunch of royal guys in this country will have to marry a bunch of royal guys in that guy, in that country, so they can cement, statesmanship. Oh dear, man, things people will do for power. But people married their aunties, man. Jesus, I swear. Someone married their uncle, but that's a European thing, coming back from the Romans. I swear, these guys. One turns around and assassinate the uncle/husband. And take the stepson, put them in power. Stepson gets drunk on power, hires a hit squad to assassinate the mother. Power. Jesus. But let's hope we don't get there, for the love of God. Let's stick to voting.
We became very morbid in the last 5 seconds.
I know.
Yeah.
Look, this European history. If you look at the things people have done for power, you really understand why you should stay out. You should stay away from, from the path of someone who is power hungry.
Yeah.
Because there's not a line they are going to cross to get to their goal, which is mostly power. But, we are going to build, let's just, I think, give this administration a chance to see what, especially the Ministry of International Relations, with regards to today's discussion, and see what, you know, what international relations relationship we are going to create, new ones, or what's what improvements are going to happen in our old, you know, trading and diplomatic partners for the next 5 years. So, fasten a seatbelt.
Yeah, we will just have to fasten seatbelts.
Yeah.
But on that note, dear listeners, you also just have to highlight, do we continue with the same particular approach? Because remember, if we are engaging in international relations for the sake of
which seeking, is shifting, by the way.
Yeah, but
things are changing left, right, and center.
Yeah, but even now, let's say that pivoting and shifting takes place.
Yeah.
Are we engaging with the same mentality to say, come and invest in our country? Or are we?
Thank you for pointing that. Look at the irony of every politician, every election running around, we will create employment. And then they're into office, and then you see the same model again of shipping away all the raw material. The question is, without value addition and the entire processing chain.
Yeah, because she said that in that speech, she said, before the raw material goes from here, we need value addition here. So are we connecting now with new bilateral relations partners internationally?
Yeah, to help
so
us.
So that they invest in us, so that we can bring better value addition to raw materials, which will still translate to our discussion we've had before. What's the return on investment for that investor?
That,
because if it's just a mentality of saying beneficiation from the raw materials, and you've got to invest no matter what in us, that business person will ask, now what am I getting out of this deal?
Yeah, look, this, obviously the value addition for a lot of developed countries is going to lead to a lot of very, you know, it's going to become a very touchy subject for a lot of developed countries that already have the processing plant of this raw material. And you have to understand that their operation depends on them shipping this raw material raw.
Yeah.
So it's going to become one heck of a very interesting discussion of whether or not, take for example, if you have, we are selling our uranium to Germany, and obviously, you know, raw, but most of it, I mind, is dominate most of that industry, especially here in Namibia, is dominated by China. So if China has the processing plant, are they going to sit there and say, you know what, well, you can now process it here. We will just close our processing plant there.
They won't.
International discourse is about to get a whole lot interesting.
They won't. Unless it's a scenario of developing it into the rest of Africa, so that you generate a local market thing here, because there's one particular subject matter we didn't look at yet, but we can still keep that.
We're still here. We're still here. So until Monday for me and Sunday for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you all have a good weekend.
And on that note, dear listeners, enjoy the rest of your weekend and your Friday in our company.
Yeah. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing.